Did you know that the U.S. Navy went from 700 commissioned ships to 6,000 during World War II?
Welcome to the Lore of the South. Lore of the South.
Follow the show on social media to keep up with what's going on and to see pics that go along with each episode. Search for Lore of the South on TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook.
Welcome back to Lore of the South with me, Kelly Cruz. How the heck are y'all doing? We're back on track, y'all. I'm going to try my darndest to get a few episodes in the bank for y'all. We don't want to run into a situation like the last couple of weeks. So I'm sitting at our kitchen bar, typing the weekend away, writing scripts. But I do love it. Just don't tell producer Mike that. I keep thinking things will slow down around here, but then I look over at the calendar and I'm like, whoa! More stuff. But you know, such is life, y'all. I'm going to give y'all a quick heads up on this episode. We've got infant death and a 12-year-old handling heavy artillery. So with that warning out of the way, how about some history-making news? This story coming from Popular Science. A team of German scientists have discovered the remains of a naturally mummified toddler in the crypt of an aristocratic family from Austria, the von Starhemberg family, and the cause of death might be surprising to we modern humans. Between radiocarbon testing and historical accounts, the baby was placed in the family crypt around 1600 CE. After an extensive renovation done by the baby's presumed father, the Count of Starhemberg, and just out of curiosity, I googled this, a count is about the equivalent to that of an English earl. The team performed a virtual autopsy and found the boy to be about a year of age, and outwardly appeared to be healthy and a chubby toddler, but the baby's weight did not equate to his health. There were signs of both rickets and pneumonia. Rickets being caused by a lack of sunlight, which creates vitamin D in humans. This little guy probably died from aristocratic vanity, which was having pale skin. The growth patterns on the little one's bones show this deficiency, and the baby might have never been let outside to see the light of day in his very short life. He was laid to rest with great care, wearing a hooded silk robe, and was placed near his grandfather, and as the records tell us, also his namesake, Reichard von Starhemberg. It's thought that baby Reichard was probably the firstborn son and heir of the then current count, and that was the one reason such care of the infant was taken. The scientists and researchers say that family crypts like this one are almost always exclusively for the count, his wife, and heir. I'll link to the article in case y'all are curious about the little guy. The preservation is both amazing and maybe slightly disturbing. We just had Memorial Day, a day to remember those who gave their lives fighting for their countries. At least 6 countries celebrate their own versions of Memorial Day, and most of them in the month of May. Today's story, as you might have gathered by the warning at the beginning, is about a kid who joined up, and spoiler alert, he does make it. So that's good news, y'all. It's an amazing tale that needs to be shared. I was 8 when I first heard about this story in the form of a made-for-TV movie. Y'all remember those? Sunday night movies in the 80s and 90s? But I digress. So anyway, today's Q follower and former child star Ricky Schroeder played Calvin Graham, a 12-year-old that made it through the health checks, boot camp, and active duty. And that's how I, as an 8-year-old, was introduced to this story. Welcome to episode 66, Calvin Graham, the 12-year-old World War II hero. Calvin Leon Graham was born on April 3rd, 1930 in Canton, Texas, which lies between Tyler and Dallas. It's also home to one of the largest flea markets in the country. But back to Calvin, y'all. Calvin was born during the height of the Depression and on the brink of World War II, the youngest of 7 kids. His father passed away sometime before the outbreak of the war, and Graham's mother remarried. And apparently, the new stepdaddy was quite abusive. Calvin then moved out of the family home and in with an older brother who kept a room in a rooming house. And Calvin was only 11 when he moved out. Calvin began selling newspapers after school and delivered telegrams on the weekend. Being around all of these news sources, he was a pretty well-informed kid, and he said in an interview later in life that he knew he hated Hitler from the start. And when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941, that sealed the deal for him. He wanted to fight. He dropped out of the 7th grade and began his plot to enlist with the help of some of his little buddies. By this time, Calvin was living in Crockett, Texas, and his mama was still stopping by to check on him at the rooming house with his brother, though she had no idea what Calvin was up to. Calvin began shaving because he hoped the old wives' tale was true and that shaving would encourage hair growth. It didn't, but he tried. From Calvin's old report cards, he and his buddies practiced forging Calvin's mother's signature. And then, while delivering papers and telegrams, they managed to lift a notary of public seal from a local hotel. Because in wartime, the U.S. would take recruits as young as 16. But as Graham said later, they did prefer you to at least be 17. It was Calvin Graham's goal to pass a 16. He knew his biggest obstacle would be the dental exam. You know, those twofers will give you away every time, 12-year molars and all that. So at age 12, dressed in his older brother's clothes, weighing in at a whopping 125 and only 5'2", Calvin Graham headed down to the enlistment office in Houston. He managed to make it through all the boards until, as he feared, he got held up at the dental exam. The dentist called Calvin out on his age, but Calvin and his 5'2" self kept responding, with his age being that of 17. The dentist was just about to stamp the enlistment papers with denied, but Calvin played his final card. The five recruits ahead of Calvin in line were also all underaged as well. So, Calvin in turn called the dentist out for allowing the other boys to pass through. The dentist then exclaimed, "I don't have time to mess with you." And on August 16, 1942, Calvin Graham became the youngest U.S. recruit in World War II. Calvin himself said, "We were losing the war, so the Navy took six of us that day." So off to San Diego again Calvin went, and to boot camp, leaving behind a letter for his mom saying he was off visiting relatives. Once there, he figured out quickly that the drill instructors were in on the open secret of kids being enlisted. And in turn, they made the kids run further and carry heavier packs than the grown men did. And y'all, I'm not sure if this was to help toughen up the kids or to maybe root them out. Maybe it was both. Calvin made it through boot camp and was assigned to the newly built USS South Dakota, a 35,000-ton battleship. They say that the crew of the South Dakota was as green as the grass in spring, but they were ready for a fight. And Calvin was on board and on his way to the Pacific Front. Calvin at 12 was a gunner and operated a 40mm gun. It wasn't long until Calvin in the South Dakota saw its first bit of action on October of 1942. They found themselves off the Santa Cruz Island in the South Pacific and in the battle for Santa Cruz. The carrier, the USS Hornet, was sunk after being repeatedly torpedoed, and the South Dakota managed to protect its carrier, the USS Enterprise, which was considered quite the prize for Japanese forces. Calvin Graham and the other gunners managed to shoot down 26 enemy aircraft. It was also during this battle that the ship's captain, Captain Gatch, was nearly mortally wounded. He was standing on the deck when a 500-pound bomb was dropped on the South Dakota. Onlookers said the captain didn't so much as flinch when he was knocked off his feet. The blast nearly tore his arm off, and the shrapnel severed his jugular. A couple of fast-thinking and moving quartermasters were able to apply life-saving first aid, and the captain was saved. He would live to fight another day. Later, he was asked why he didn't hit the deck, and the captain's response was this: "I consider it beneath the dignity of the captain of an American battleship to flop for a Japanese bomb." Those below deck on the South Dakota said they barely felt a rumble because of how thick the plating was on the ship. The South Dakota then returned to Pearl Harbor, where it and the captain were patched up. Captain Gatch returned to the South Dakota with his arm in a sling and ready for the fight. The South Dakota and its crew were fixing to enter the biggest fight ever, the Battle of Guadalcanal. On the trip back to the front, the now 13-year-old Calvin was fixing to be in for the fight of his young life. On November 14th, the South Dakota, the Washington, and the Enterprise went out on a night mission. It was then and there, off the coast of the Savo Islands, that the destroyer group was fired upon by the Japanese Navy. The battle lasted for 4 days, and during that time, the South Dakota took 42 hits from the highly accurate Japanese destroyers. One of these hits badly burned Calvin, who remained at his post, continuously returning fire. Another hit took out all the power, the radio, and the radar. In the next hit, shrapnel went flying and tore through young Calvin Graham's jaw, knocked him down 3 stories of the superstructure, and he landed on his back. Y'all, this kid did not even lose consciousness. Graham, after catching his breath, regained his feet and began pulling other sailors to safety. His quick thinking probably saved many lives. He said he would remove the belts from the dead and use them as tourniquets on the living. He'd apply makeshift bandages and also passed out cigarettes to help comfort the wounded and those who were in shock. 38 sailors were killed that day and more than 60 were wounded. Calvin Graham was awarded the Bronze Star for his heroism and a Purple Heart for his injuries. The South Dakota survived the battle, and they quickly brought the ship's power back up and disappeared into the smoke and confusion, leaving the Japanese to believe that they had sunk our battleship. The South Dakota tiredly crept to New York to undergo extensive repairs. It was while Calvin was in New York that his mama back home in Texas caught sight of young Calvin on a newsreel. She quickly reported her underage son to the Department of the Navy. This did not go well for Calvin. He was sent to Corpus Christi and thrown in the brig, and stripped of his medals. He was jailed for about 3 months before one of his sisters was able to basically blackmail the Navy into releasing him. She threatened to take Calvin's story to the press and out the Navy for allowing the enlistment of a child, then the mistreatment of him once he became a war hero. With that, the Navy tossed young Calvin out of its jail, and with nothing to his name but a suit and a couple of dollars and a dishonorable discharge to his name. Calvin received a brief hero's welcome while in Houston. He was invited to film premieres and was applauded as a hero. Then, Calvin tried to go back to his life as a teenager, but he had seen and done too much. He was married by 14, a father at 15, and divorced by 17. Then at 17, with a service record that seemed to have been wiped clean, he was eligible for the draft. So Calvin enlisted in the Marine Corps. Soon after enlisting, Calvin broke his back in a fall, and the Marines released him with 20% disability. Calvin spent a good chunk of his childhood fighting for his, our, and this country to practically have it turn its back on him. In 1976, Calvin began a letter campaign to President Jimmy Carter in the hopes of gaining an honorable discharge and the VA benefits to help with all of his wartime injuries. In 1977, two Texas senators took up the bat for Graham and introduced a bill that would gain Graham his discharge. In 78, President Carter reinstated all of Calvin's medals with the exception of his Purple Heart. Then, finally, in 88, President Reagan got Calvin Graham his medical benefits he so deserved. Calvin Graham passed away at age 62 from heart failure on November 6, 1992 in Fort Worth, Texas. 2 years later, his Purple Heart was restored and given to his widow. Side notes. I feel like I haven't done side notes in a while, but this story has a couple. After Calvin was removed from duty and the South Dakota was repaired, the Navy removed all identifying markings from the battleship, and she became known as Battleship X, or sometimes Old Nameless. She returned to her carrier group and continued to shoot down enemy aircraft in the Pacific. The Japanese never knew that their old nemesis was back on the water. In 1991, former child vet Ray Jackson formed a group for those who had enlisted while underage. At that time, it had more than 1,200 members, and at least 26 of them were women. Jackson, in an interview, was asked why he thought underage enlistment had been so high during the World Wars, and his response was this: "Many of his kids came from large families and oftentimes poor families. Sometimes home life wasn't the best, and maybe they had an abusive parent. So the military and war were a way out." And y'all, that's pretty much one of the reasons my dad had enlisted. He enlisted at 17, the preferred age, as Calvin put it. But it was to escape a bad home life, and that was in the 60s. Then my dad, he found out that the Navy wasn't any friendlier, and he was the rebellious sort. And also, y'all, whatever happened to the dentist who passed all those kids along into active duty? Calvin was the youngest, but he said there were 6 kids that were recruited that day. That's not just letting a 16-year-old through that's a week from his birthday. That was a lot of kids. Now, how about the oldest home by state, brought to us by the Discoverer blog? We're well into the M's, y'all. Michigan and Minnesota. In Michigan, we have the officers' stone quarters of Fort Mackinac, located on Mackinac Island. It was built as a fort by the British, and the walls are 4 feet thick, built to withstand any old-timey bombardment. It is one of the 14 historic buildings located in Mackinac Island State Park. Now on to Minnesota. We have another fort, this one built in 1825 and was known as Fort Snelling. The old fort is now a living history museum. I've got a couple of shout outs to give. Thank you, Miss Judy, for upping your Patreon pledge. And Elle, thank you so much for becoming a supporter. Welcome to the Lots family. If y'all want to help out like Judy, Elle, and Sydney, please consider joining us over on Patreon. For as little as $3 a month, you'll get one extra episode per month, plus 2 after-show episodes where producer Mike and I sit down and discuss current goings-ons and do episode recaps. And y'all, we are so close to covering the cost of producing the show. I'm sure producer Mike will sneak in a little Patreon preview clip in here somewhere, just a little sample. Oh, and I almost forgot, we also upload all of the regular episodes over onto Patreon too, so when we pick up commercials, you also get commercial-free listening. So think about joining the Lots family. Also, I have a box of Lore of the South t-shirts that need homes. I have sizes small to double XL. $30 for one, and that includes shipping, so email me if you're interested. Check us out on social media. I always post pics to go along with every single episode. If you want to get in touch, you can email the show at loreofthesouth@gmail.com. And with that, we'll talk to y'all later on the next episode of Lore of the South.
stay tuned for a preview of our latest Patreon episode. I know they would use dung for patching up wounds and stuff like that. And I wonder why that would have been, because it created more of a, like a seal, I guess, over a wound?
I guess so. Like stucco, poop stucco.
I guess so. Ugh. I mean, granted, I mean, it is like filled with bacteria and whatnot. But.
So, okay. So apparently sometimes the using of poo could cause tetanus and lockjaw.
Oh, yeah.
But sometimes apparently, maybe even a lot of the time it worked. Apparently, guys, subtypes of poo had antibacterial properties, which we also know to be true about honey.
Right.
But so let's not be rubbing poop on stuff, okay?
The Last Kingdom book series, they talk a lot about honey and cobwebs, about patching up an injury with cobwebs and honey.
Right. The cobwebs were used as an anticoagulant. Well, it would be used as a coagulant, like to clot the blood, is what they would use the cobwebs for. Yeah. The poop was probably just to keep the cobwebs on there.
Yeah.
Is what I would think. They'd also use stuff like moss and things like that, too. And the honey thing does work. Like, we have now found that that's antibacterial and honey never goes bad. But at the same time, it can form botulism. But maybe, I guess it's so low amounts it doesn't hurt adults, but it can hurt babies because they tell you not to give babies honey. Anyways, so stick to honey, y'all.
I just thought that was an allergy, that was more of an allergy thing.
No, it's some, like, I believe it's botulism that's in it. So now we're going to move on to women's health. If my battery doesn't go dead, we may have to pick this back up, guys.
If you loved what you heard, check out the Patreon page for exclusive content by searching for The Lore of the South on Patreon.com.